You are listening to WPVM LP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina, and globally at WPVMFM.org.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. Some clouds around as we wrap up the weekend. Temperatures falling to around 23 tonight after reaching near 44. Plenty of sunshine for Monday, the high 51. Monday night, mostly clear, the low around 30. Mostly sunny and nice on Tuesday with a high of 65, the low around 43 for Wednesday night. I'm Johnny Cottle on Radio Asheville 103.7.
Welcome to the Resilience Realm, a syndicated radio program airing on WPVM FMLP 103.7, Radio Asheville and the Pacifica Network. The show airs on Sundays at 10 a.m. EST from Asheville, North Carolina. Your host is Dawn Westmoreland, a resilience keynote speaker, HR professional, author, life coach, and retired Air Force veteran. On the Resilience Realm, Dawn amplifies powerful voices, including employment attorneys, mental health professionals, veterans, employees, employers, and community leaders who share practical resilience strategies. They discuss tips for moving forward to find the strength to seek support when systems fail. Here is your host, Dawn Westmoreland.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome again. I'm Dawn Westmoreland, your talk host. Today, I have a fellow veteran, Don Scully. He's in Marshall, North Carolina area, and he is all about resiliency, mental health, and we're also going to talk about veterans too. Hello, Don. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much.
Why is mental health so important to you, Don? I know you're retired from the Army.
Yes.
And why is that so important to you?
Emotions make us human. There's a stigma that comes with those of us that are veterans, those of us that are combat veterans, civilians who are first responders, that have that antiquated machismo attitude where, you know, I don't cry, I don't feel, I bottle it up, I hide it. All of those things lead to very, very negative issues, right? Suicidal ideation, substance abuse, divorce, domestic violence, homelessness, huge epidemics that can be prevented if people are willing and able to talk about mental health.
I'd like to start off with why it's so very important. Let's get a little bit of your backstory. You spent time in the Army.
I did.
Yeah, yes. Let's talk about your time in the Army, a little bit about your past.
So my military service is two branches. I did 4 years in the Navy right out of high school. Nothing spectacular. I was in Pearl Harbor. I did two deployments to the Persian Gulf. 9/11 happened. I joined the Army, spent a year in Fort Riley, Kansas, sitting there wondering why I was sitting in Fort Riley, Kansas. The Special Forces recruiter came and visited Fort Riley. I took his PT test and went to selection and spent the next 14 years as a Green Beret with 6 combat deployments, 5 to Iraq and 1 to Afghanistan.
Wow. What was that like, Don?
Hard. It's a lifestyle. Being an operator at that level, it's a tremendous amount of sacrifice. It's a tremendous amount of resilience that's needed. Mm-hmm. There are processes that you go through and you don't even know it. It's that disassociation, which then leads to the inability to form familiar relationships, or certainly struggle with those familiar relationships. Some of the numbers, to give you an example, in 2005, when I got to 5th Group, the divorce rate was 40%. That's pretty high. In 2016, when I medically retired, I got blown up in Afghanistan. But in 2016, when I got medically retired, the divorce rate was 80%. To give you another number, a married couple with one person that has untreated PTSD, the divorce rate is 70%. So you see these numbers that are immense, and they're huge. And the problem is nobody wants to talk about that. They certainly didn't then. It's much better now, but it took a lot of people being held accountable. It took organizations relooking at their investments, certainly from a soft perspective. Millions of dollars are spent on each one of us to train us to this level and to send us to all these schools and to keep us at that high level of productivity. But then it gets to that point where guys are like, hey, my family's more important. I'm out. And they've only done 6 years, or maybe they've only done 4 years. So the Army's not getting their investment. So they're now looking at, hey, what is important? Well, it's mental health. I know that in the early aughts, at that op tempo when we were in Iraq, 6 months on, 6 months off, 6 months on, 6 months off, if one of the guys had said, hey, I have a problem with what we did, or I need to talk about what went down on target, that guy's stuff's going to be in the hallway, because now we don't trust him that he's going to do what he needs to do, right? Is he going to break down on target? Is he going to not be able to pull the trigger? Is he going to second guess himself? That puts us at risk. That's the wrong answer, though. The right answer should have been to bring him in closer and for us to have that discussion. He's brave. His bravery and courage in broaching the subject should have been an example for us, as opposed to a shame. The psychiatrist at Fifth Group, her office was all the way at the end of the hall. So as you walked through the headquarters building, you had to pass everybody else's office. So everybody saw where you went. That's not good for your career.
Good point. Good point. I'm glad you're talking about this.
So what she ended up doing in order to speak to all of us, and it was like an open secret, like there would be this guy at the corner of the building and she would talk to him for 15 or 20 minutes. Then she would turn another corner around the building and there'd be another guy that she talked to for 15 or 20 minutes. And then she would just go around the buildings and just, there's all these dudes standing out there that, you know, they don't smoke, they don't dip, but they're just waiting for an opportunity to unload or to be heard. Mm-hmm. And that was a rarity. It's much better now. There's organizations now that work with the military directly as far as that transition from active duty to retirement. I know Brothers and Sisters Like These is working with the Navy and Marines out at Camp Lejeune. I know Heart of Horse Sense is working with some of the soft guys out of Bragg, working on the family, that family unit, that cohesion, and the understanding of what it is that trauma does and the coping mechanisms that can be taught and that are needed to alleviate those stresses.
Do you think that all this should have happened much sooner?
Of course, of course. I mean, World War I, it was shell shock. Those guys were hidden away in sanatoriums and asylums. World War II, it was never talked about. Vietnam, it was a disgrace. The Korean War has been completely skipped over. Persian Gulf War, I don't think people even bring that up, to be honest with you. And GWAT, that's the last 21 years. So that's an entire generation. The generation we have now, whatever it is, Gen A, I guess, they are very much aware of their mental health. And that's a great thing.
Yes.
And how they're not only holding each other accountable, but how they're holding themselves accountable. This, you know, this job isn't good for my mental health, this atmosphere, this environment, whatever it may be. And that's a catalyst to change. That's a huge catalyst to looking at people as people and not just as products, not just as mass produced. And that goes all the way back to what I was saying a minute ago about, from a soft perspective, you can't mass produce soft. It's impossible, right? Mm-hmm. What we do is it just takes a certain type of individual. But that investment, as with any company, has to be put at that level of your employee, whatever employee means. Mm. Because the employee is who's going to produce for your company. That's who's going to represent it. And you want those people to be healthy, mentally and physically.
You know, John, let me jump in. I was so happy that you were talking about the different phases, you know, the different wars and such, because, you know, I was just talking yesterday about, you know, I was at Horse Sense, which is in Marshall, and they do equine therapy, right? And so I was talking to some people out there about how my stepfather, I called him Pop, you know, he lied about his age and he went into World War II at 16, but, you know, he never talked about the war. And I think that's important to remind people that, you know, some people are not talking about it, they're stuffing it in. And, you know, growing up with seven brothers and stepbrothers, you know, I got to really understand that men are conditioned. And today we have to break that. We have to break that stigma.
It's true. One of the things, you know, like, so I have a little girl. And before her, before she was 5 years old, she had no idea who I was. I was just a guy that was home and then a guy that would leave. It took another 4 or 5 years of diligent work on my part before she would even come to me, much less give her a hug. So a lot of loss and pain there. But if I had decided to remain cold and stoic or impassive and show no emotion, well, she's gonna feed off that or she's gonna starve, right? So not only am I a stranger, but I'm a stranger that doesn't show her anything. I'm not happy, I'm not sad. Generally, I'm pretty much angry, right? Or like most of us, we're self-medicating. So I'm angry and I'm drunk. Or I'm hungover and I'm angry. What I need to be is showing her joy. I need to show her excitement. I need to show her praise. I need to show her pride. And to do those things, I have to face the traumas of my past. I have to put those in perspective and understand that, one, I'm not alone, and two, those things that happen, those situations that I was placed in, are need to be put in perspective, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
That doesn't mean that I'm that person. It just means that I'm me and had to make those decisions in that situation. I look at it like a car. So I want those different aspects of me are all in the car, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want my trauma to be the hood ornament. I want the trauma to be like in the back seat. Like, he's with me, but he's not driving.
And gotcha.
For me to go forward, right, I got to back out of the driveway a little bit. So I look in my little tiny rearview mirror, right? And I'm backing out. And now I can go forward because I've handled what I needed to in the past. And now I can move forward, right? That's why the windshield's huge and the rearview mirror is tiny. It's a little
analogy
I like to use, right? So it helps. It helps those that haven't been affected as much of us have in Western North Carolina, as far as Helene goes, with the recent trauma we've all suffered. But those that are maybe having not difficulty, but trouble understanding what it is trauma does. Trauma is a physiological change. It completely rewires how you think, how you act, what you do, everything.
Yeah. And I want your opinion on this, Don. A lot of people associate PTSD with veterans, with them going off to wars or deployments and such. But are there other instances in the military or in life that can also, in your opinion, cause anxiety, depression, PTSD?
Yeah, absolutely. Military sexual trauma is huge in the military. That's kind of the it's like an open secret. Everybody knows it goes on, but nobody wants to discuss it. Mm-hmm. My wife is a veteran. She suffers from military sexual trauma. You yourself, you did 20 years in. I can't even imagine some of the things you went through. Certainly back in the 80s and 90s when it was happening, even worse, right? So That's one, military sexual trauma, that's huge. The VA is finally starting to recognize that, starting to initiate programs to address those, moral injury, set trauma groups, female-only groups. Another thing, you know, a recent event would be the air traffic controllers out there in Newark, where their system went down. And I mean, I can't imagine, here I am an air traffic controller and I'm looking at the radar screen and I got my planes and I got hundreds of people I'm responsible for. And
yeah,
there you go. Now I can't talk to them. I can't see them. It's gotta be traumatic. And it was, and mm-hmm. those, there are, for the FAA, they had things in place to address those issues.
Yeah. And
even though these air traffic controllers have taken time off, people are still giving them crap about taking time off. Like, how are we going to address mental health if people take mental health days that are in place and you're still going to give them, you know, a load of crap for it? That's, we either support it or we don't. You can't sit on the fence with this. Trauma can come from anything, though. It can come from a car wreck. It can come from finding a parent deceased. I mean, anything and everything that causes a physiological reaction of anxiety or depression within you, whatever that may be, and for everyone it could be different, is traumatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've given some super good, powerful examples. I know when I was in the Air Force, and I've been retired now, I didn't deploy to any combat zones, but some of my anxiety and depression come from bad experiences.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll be an Air Force recruiter. This is now 27 years ago, during the hardest time to put anybody in any of the military branches. I mean, they were given up to $14,000 bonuses for high-end jobs. And we had a heck of a time, Don, recruiting. And this is in South Dakota. And I remember the leadership increase in our hours. And I'd worked 70 hours. It was nothing to go to the headquarters 14-hour drive and then have a meeting, them tell you, go back home right now. And I remember driving off the road and almost having an accident. And that's when my major depression came in. I never had it before.
Yeah, it's, some of it can come from exactly what we were saying a second ago about not investing in your people. They were looking at you as just this cog in the wheel and not valuing what it is you as an individual brought to the team. That's across the board. You know, I think larger corporations are starting to get the picture that if you don't treat your people like people and, mm-hmm. and let them handle their mental health, and you as a corporation or company or whatever, big organization, military organization, address those issues or allot time for those issues, people aren't gonna join. People are gonna leave your company.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at the recent difficulty the military had the last couple of years with just filling their quotas,
mm-hmm. right?
Some of it could be attributed to politics. Some of it could be attributed to mental health awareness, right? It all plays a game in there, but those things are getting better. And again, you know, that experience, just your experience alone, that traumatic, that just, it's the gamut, right? Mm-hmm. There's an entire rainbow of issues that can cause that injury.
Yes.
And that's another thing that they're looking at doing too. Instead of calling it post-traumatic stress disorder, they're looking at calling it post-traumatic stress injury. And that'll also help a lot with some of the stigma that's associated with discussing these issues. I know that some of the first responders we've spoken to out here since the summit that Heart of Horse Sense held with Christy Warren coming in from California,
mm-hmm.
was speaking to the first responders in Asheville and discussing with them, hey, would it have made a difference if we called it post-traumatic stress injury or post-traumatic stress disorder? And the answer across the board was yes, was more first responders would have attended had it not been called a disorder, because there's a stigma associated with a disorder more so than I'm injured, right?
I totally agree.
A disorder is something people they want to put away, they want to hide. But an injury is something that you can heal. Mm-hmm. Disorders, a disorder, right? Something you always have.
Yeah. Don, let's fast forward. Now today you're out there doing a lot of things. You're, I believe, coaching, mentoring, speaking. What are you doing? You're out there helping a lot of people right now. Let's get into that.
Okay. I am looking to get more on board with the Heart of Horse Sense out here. They have a board opening position. I'm excited about meeting with Shannon Knapp, in fact, later today, to discuss that opportunity and to go over how the first summit, the first responder summit went. I'm also working with Elizabeth Corbett out here in Asheville. She is an EMDR certified therapist. She also works at Heart of Horse Sense with equine therapy. Shannon does some work with some of the special forces groups out of Fort Bragg. I'm looking to get on board with that as well. My LLC just went live. So
thank you.
The coaching opportunities and speaking opportunities should be made more readily available. I don't know if that's the right phrasing, but those opportunities should come sooner. However, I do have 5 speaking engagements between now and the end of June.
That's pretty impressive, Don.
Yeah, thank you. I do a lot of work with veterans. I'm in a Veteran X program. I facilitate on Fridays at the Charles George VA. That's every Friday from 10:45 to 12:15. We discuss issues. It's a group therapy, holistic approach to trauma. My wife as well does trauma work. She has a YouTube. Her name is Sarah Scully. You get onto YouTube and look for Sarah Scully, you'll find her. She's huge in involving the community here, you know, Hot Springs, Marshall, Mars Hill, everything and anything within Madison County, Rawlins, all of the devastation that we had here, and then keeping people informed about progresses that are made and opportunities that are coming up. Whether that's employment, whether that's businesses opening, just very, very aware and spreading that awareness out. Both of us are also
in the area. Great job, too, because I'm following.
Yeah, thank you. Hit that follow button, as my kids would say. like that link. Both of us in the American Legion out here. The American Legion, we have a very small post in Marshall, but we're looking to branch. We're looking to grow. Our post was the only post, once Helene passed, was the only post in the nation that was not operable.
Oh, wow.
We had about, if I remember the numbers correctly, it was something like $340,000 worth of damage.
Oh, my goodness.
Basically, the only thing that survived was some steps that we had put in prior to the hurricane. We were fortunate enough that a group called Fixing It for Christ out of Raleigh had come down, and they were kind enough to let us to offer their organization's help and funding. We needed to raise $80,000 for the foundation, and then they provided the additional $250,000 to fix the building. We were able to do that, luckily enough, shockingly enough, in a very short amount of time, and they've been out rebuilding the post, and it's going to be a beautiful, beautiful thing. The goal with that is to open that post to other organizations, first responders, looking at marriages, ceremonies, parties, whatever people want to lease the post for. And then those monies and funds that we raise would then be given back to the people of Madison County and Marshall through scholarships, through Boy State opportunities, where they go and they learn, they spend a week and they learn about politics and the how governments work. So a lot going on, very, very busy, very involved. What else?
That's a lot, Don. And
that's,
for somebody to put $250,000, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. We're very, very excited about that.
Yeah.
Very excited. Some of the other things, we're looking at opportunities again to go out and speak to people. Again, we've got those speaking engagements. If you want to come out to our Memorial Day ceremony at Black Mountain on Memorial Day on the 26th, both my wife and I are speaking. We'll be, we've got another, there's the Veterans Treatment Court. I'm not sure if the listeners are familiar with that. And what that is veterans, they get in a little bit of trouble with the law due to the traumas that they've suffered. They go through this treatment court. This treatment court is no joke. Yeah, some, you know, it's a 2.5, for some it's been a 3-year program to get healthy, to get their mental health and wellness under control and stable. And they're given a brand new opportunity. I've been spoke at one graduation. I'll be speaking at another.
Fantastic.
Yeah, very, very excited. Just the Asheville community is very, very involved with the veteran community that we have here. We have one of the best VAs in the nation, hands down. In fact, I know two of the board members for the Brothers and Sisters writing program is on the mayor's veteran board. So she's heavily involved with the appreciation that she shows to veterans. So it's a great thing to see. It's a great thing to see. Much, much different than things would have been, you know, in the early 80s and late 70s.
Totally agree. Yeah, and Dr. Kevin Rumley, awesome.
Oh, right. Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to be interviewing him very soon on our radio
show, he's
done fantastic work, has an interesting background and such. So I'm really glad you brought that up, because, you know, I was asked by Shannon Knapp of Horse Sense of the Carolinas to come out and give a testimonial of what my experience has been, you know, with the equine therapy. And he happened to be there. And I don't know what you would call the veterans. There were the veterans that were in the program. We'll just call them the veterans in that program with the court system, and it's the best thing ever. And I got to speak in front of them. It was such an honor. And, you know, veterans are not out there doing bad things just because they're bad people. Sometimes they're affected and their mental health is affected, right?
Well, no. And you know, most of those veterans need, what they want is they want to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
First, they want to be heard. So that's really just sitting down and listening to what the veteran has to say, what anybody that's suffering trauma has to say. It doesn't necessarily have to be a veteran, but as a veteran-centric program, yes. So you listen and you sit down and you actively listen to what does the veteran say. You're empathetic. You're not sympathetic. That's pity. That's, don't give that. You know, you empathize and try to place yourself, whether you can or have a similar experience or not, but in that veteran's position, what are those feelings? What are those emotions? What do you think those things have done to them? How do you think that's affected what they think the future is going to hold, or what others think of them? One of the greatest questions we had at the First Responder Summit, and it was the entire reason that we put the summit on, was we had a panel member and asked the question, if you saw me today talking to you about my mental health and how I needed help, but tomorrow I showed up at your house on a call, what would you think of me?
Good point.
And everybody in the room was like, we think that we wouldn't think about it, but if we did, for whatever reason, we would be like, yeah, this guy's human, right? And they're cognizant and aware enough that they need to take care of their mental health. I would actually hold you in higher esteem and opinion than if you hadn't done that. And it shocked that individual, because that shame that's associated with the idea that we're weak if we show emotion, or we're weak if we have to talk about the horrible things that we see and traumatic experiences that we have. You know, the average person will have two traumatic experiences, on average, two traumatic experiences in their life. Whatever that may be. First responders and veterans, and certainly combat veterans, we could have two a day.